TV with Victor Thorne and Lisa Giuliani. The revolution is being televised.
Hello, it's Friday, October 15th, and you're watching Wing TV. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing TV. This is a show we've been looking forward to for at least a month, I'll bet you. It's been at least a month since Lisa booked this show. And we have on today Mr. Jerry Russell from 911-strike. com. We'll bring him on in a moment. We're going to talk about the Pentagon, what happened on 9/11. But before that, we want to remind everybody that tonight at 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, I'll be on Visigoth's radio show. It's called From the Grassy Knoll. And you can find that at pascofiasco.org. And that's P-A-S-C-O, pascofiasco.org. And he does a wonderful show, so tune in if you're around. And also, my Bill O'Reilly article is up. It deals with his tawdry sex case, and as we said on the site, if this has some graphic material in it, if you're offended by such things, please don't read it, folks, because this is taken right from the court transcripts that were filed with the New York State Supreme Court, so it gets pretty rough in there.
It's the nature of the beast.
It is, so if this kind of stuff, if this isn't your cup of tea, please don't read it. So, with that all said and done, we'd like to introduce Mr. Jerry Russell to Wing TV. Oh, yeah, one last thing. We have a photographer in here today taking some pictures, so if you hear some flashes or snaps or something, that's why. So, Jerry, how you doing?
Hi, Jerry.
Hey, it's really great to be on the show. You know, Rick and I are just a couple of electronic engineers who spent a little time looking into the Pentagon scenario, and you guys have had some amazing guests on your show, and it's just such a privilege to be on with you. And I'd also like to thank you for agreeing to give Rick his own show later on.
Yeah, we were originally going to have both these gentlemen on at the same time, but they couldn't.
We couldn't work out the technical part of it.
To have both on.
I tell you, Jerry, we've been looking forward to this show with you so much because you guys have presented one of the most rational, sane pieces of analysis that's come forward yet on the Pentagon strike.
Right. And we want everyone to go, once again, it's www.911-strike.com or -.com. It's a great site. So to start the show off, Jerry, and I realize this question could take the entire show to answer, but if someone from the World Book Encyclopedia came up to you and said, we want you to write the official version of what happened at the Pentagon on the morning of 9/11, how would you briefly describe what actually took place?
Well, I would say the predominance of evidence indicates that what happened is a magic show, a staged event that was carefully crafted to present the impression of a 757 strike at the Pentagon. And it was done with Hollywood-quality special effects. They used shaped charges inside of the Pentagon to create a damage pattern that looks very much like someone might imagine a 757 might do. They created damage on the in the area leading up to that strike, indicating that the engines hit a generator and a vent. That damage could only take place by virtue of a 757 or by a total fake. And they planted a number of eyewitnesses to create a credible story that a 757 came ripping through. And yet, by carefully examining the photographic record, we can see that the whole thing was indeed a fake.
Okay, I'd like to ask you this. We're going to get to the star lineup of witnesses about this official story, but I would like to ask you about the FBI early reports. They acknowledged to the international press, namely the French paper Liberation, the pieces of the plane are stocked in a warehouse and are marked with the serial numbers of Flight 77. Yet the FBI said that the plane was destroyed by fire, and then they then contradicted their earlier statements. So, has anyone ever seen these pieces of plane?
And where is this hangar or this warehouse?
Well, you know, the Smithsonian now has an exhibit on 9/11. And they have pieces of the planes that hit the World Trade Center on display. But no such display for the Flight 77. They only have one little piece of something that supposedly fell into someone's car on the highway. It's a little piece of fiberglass. It's pretty nondescript, and it's in a pretty little box. That's all the Smithsonian has on display.
Yeah, so
I've never heard any reports of anyone seeing that plane. And it is really interesting to track the changes in that story, because Ed Plower, the fire chief responsible, went on the air early and said that there might have been a few small pieces, but nothing that you could identify as a fuselage. And then later on, he went on to say that, well, there were pieces of the tail and seats and everything, and it was...
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, isn't it funny?
It was quite a morphing of the story.
Yeah.
And I think that the early reports that it was destroyed completely in the fire probably helped the fire workers and so forth who were cleaning up the debris to kind of understand why they weren't seeing very much debris.
So they're not giving any guided tours of this hangar or this warehouse, huh?
No, I haven't seen any. And you know, this is an international controversy. Not very many people in the United States take it seriously, but this was a major story in France with Terry Masson's book being a bestseller, and it was a major story in Germany, and I'm sure it's been a major story in the Islamic world, and it looks really bad for the United States. It looks like we're staging some kind of Reichstag fire.
Yeah. Now, Lisa's
so
going to...
If these remnants really do exist, I sure hope the... U.S. government comes forward with them.
Yeah. Now, Lisa's going to ask you some more questions about witnesses, and there is quite a plethora of conflicting evidence or testimony with the witnesses, but there's one woman, an air traffic controller named Danielle O'Brien, who followed the radar screen of whatever was coming in towards the Pentagon, and of any witness, I think I would trust an air traffic controller over anybody, and she basically said that this couldn't have been a Boeing 757 that hit the Pentagon. What more do you know about this?
Well, she had been the flight controller on some other interesting flights as well that have been controversial, so I know that much, and I know, of course, that she's a government employee, and I know that those radar readings that she came up with, that she was basing her testimony on, have never been released to the public.
Right.
Also that the flight controllers from nearby Reagan International never testified as to what they saw on their radar. So to me, it's possible that her account is overblown, and I'm inclined to believe that there was a 757 that overflew the Pentagon, because there was a lot of eyewitness testimony to that effect, that people saw a 757 flying over the Hilton, and they saw one flying over the gas station, and a lot of people on the highway saw it approach, and so I believe it was there, and you had a pilot on a while back that said that a 757 couldn't possibly have been doing that at 500 miles an hour, and at the G-forces that Danielle O'Brien stated.
Right.
So I'm inclined to believe that Danielle O'Brien probably, sensationalized that story somewhat and overblew it, and maybe that was contributing to this theory that there was a missile of some sort, an F-14 or a Global Hawk or some small maneuverable aircraft on an approach to the Pentagon. And we believe that whole story of a small plane is yet another red herring.
Okay, Ed Plower, as we were talking about him a few minutes ago, at first he said he only saw some small parts of the plane visible from the interior. He later changed his story and said he saw large sections of the fuselage and other large sections like the landing gear and whatnot. But he's not the only one whose story changed. The testimonies of Frank Probst and Don Mason also changed, and they turned out to be two government employees who were actually working on the crew that was renovating the Pentagon. Would you like to talk about them a little bit?
Yeah, well, first of all, this is a really important point in our story, is that the part of the Pentagon that was hit was under renovation, and that means that a crew of men had total access to that area to do the sort of magic show that we're talking about.
Right.
And Frank Probst and Mr. Mason would have been on that team of individuals who had that full access. So if this is a crime scene, they would be prime suspects for having set up the crime. And their story changed in the following way. At first, in the initial reports, Mr. Probst was walking out close to the highway. And he said that he actually was standing under the aircraft as it approached, and that he watched it clip the antenna off of a Jeep Cherokee. And so the only problem with that testimony is that there was really no possible reason why he would have been walking out by the highway.
Just happened to be there.
Because he was supposedly proceeding from one meeting to another, or from his office to a meeting. And if you look at the aerial map of the Pentagon, it would have been way out of his way to walk all the way out to the highway.
Later on,
his testimony was that he was walking near the heliport, which is much closer to where the airplane hit. And that made it much more difficult to understand how he even survived the blast of the engines. which are giant fans that suck in high velocity air and spit it out at tremendous velocity and heat.
Right, and one man corroborated the other man's statement.
Right.
Which area?
The corroboration appeared later on. The initial story was just Mr. Probst himself, and later on, when there was this controversy about, well, where was Mr. Probst? There was Mr. Mason to say, oh yeah, I saw where he was.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Now, Jerry, we've talked a lot on this show about the dimension of the hole in the face of the Pentagon. This is before the roof line collapsed and the facade collapsed, and it's about 18 feet in diameter, or such a dimension. There's also something called the Purdue Report that studied the impact of aircrafts on reinforced concrete. And as you mentioned, we had Russ Wittenberg on our show.
Right.
He said that if a Boeing 757 did hit the Pentagon, it wouldn't be the nose of the plane that would be creating the biggest hole. It would be the engines, because that's where all the weight is. So,
and there'd be two holes, not
right,
one.
Right, exactly. So speak a little bit about all these different factors.
Yeah, I think that the hole is certainly something that most people look at and say, this doesn't look quite right. And I spent a lot of time thinking about the physics of what would happen when an aircraft strikes a concrete wall. And there's actually a study by Sugano about that, where they took an F-14 and crashed it into a concrete wall at 500 miles an hour. And that was a very thick and heavy concrete wall. And what happened was that the F-14 was totally shattered into a million little pieces of shrapnel. And spread about on the area surrounding.
Yet there was very little on the lawn.
So you basically have two scenarios for what can happen to the mass of the airplane. One is that it punches through the concrete and masonry. In other words, that in the test of strength, the airplane might win, in which case the airplane would go create a hole and pass through. And the other possible scenario is that the concrete and masonry wins the test of strength, in which case the airframe winds up shattered. A possible scenario, and I'm not saying this is the only scenario or that I could guarantee this is what would happen if you really hit a 757 in the building, but a possible scenario is that the fuselage and the landing gear in particular would have enough mass to win the test of strength and create a hole, and that the tail and the outer parts of the wings would possibly lose the test of strength and be shattered and converted into confetti.
Right.
That's one plausible scenario, but the engines are a big problem.
And there's no hole for
it. The only excuse that's in the AFCE report is that, well, one of the engines hit this generator, and the other engine hit this exhaust vent, which was a concrete structure out in front of the Pentagon. And, well, gosh, maybe both of the engines shattered at that point. The momentum of the rotors would have been stopped at that point and converted into energy that could shatter those engines. And maybe that's why we don't see holes specifically created by the engine.
Okay, right. Jerry, I want to get back to some more eyewitness testimony, because A lot of people are hanging this whole case on the credibility of these witnesses, yet they're not seeing what we're seeing, so we want them to see this. John Judge is pushing the claim, or has been pushing the claim, of a woman who says her car was sliced and crushed by a part of the landing gear from this plane. Now, why is this account questionable, and how could this woman survive such a thing?
And also speak a little bit about plants. People there that are on the scene planted to give testimony so that other people, it conditions other people to say the same thing.
Right, right. Well, first of all, as far as the landing gear testimony, that's very problematic because if the landing gear had been down, then it would have hit the grass.
Right.
And we would have seen those streaks in the photographic record. And also the vast majority of eyewitnesses say that the landing gear was up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, another important thing to realize about the eyewitness testimony, and Gerard Holmgren did a lot of work on this, going through it all in the press, is that a lot of it is very inconsistent. Very few people actually claim to have seen the impact. A lot of people claim to have seen some sort of small plane. And it's just all over the map. And in that kind of context, a few plants could go a long ways to create an impression of something happening that really didn't. And it's also important to remember that the whole thing was crafted as a magic show.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe there was an overflight of a 757. People would have seen that, and they might have seen it a little bit smaller than it really was because it would be a little higher than they were thinking it would be. And then they would see the flash of the explosion at the Pentagon simultaneous with the aircraft doing the overflight. And all of that was happening as the onlookers were looking into the morning sun. And then nobody would really be sure exactly what they saw. It happened in a matter of milliseconds.
Right. Now, you've written
about... And then you have the plants saying, oh, yeah, I know exactly what happened. So
right.
A lot of people would just go along with that.
Yeah. Now, you spoke, or you mentioned earlier about some shaped charge explosives that were inside or part of this magic show. How do you, from your perspective, how do you see this happening to blow a hole in the front? And, you know, is this what created the holes?
Well, yeah, I think that it was, and if you look carefully at the columns in the hole, they're blown outwards rather than inwards, which you would think if it was the momentum of the airplane that broke the columns that they would have been bent inward.
Right.
You did also have some witnesses who said they smelled cordite.
Right,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
Which you wouldn't expect in an airplane crash, and we found some pictures on the internet, actually at DOD sites, that showed little speckles of black residue that looked like explosive. So again, that was another point that we felt indicated possibly that this was
despite the complete lack of
that.
Jerry. Despite the complete lack of tangible physical evidence at the Pentagon after this alleged crash, a lot of people still hold to the theory, you know, that the official version is correct, and they base it on the debris pile, the debris surrounding the Pentagon. What's wrong with the debris? Why is there such controversy about the debris?
Well, I don't see anything in the debris that looks like an aircraft. I see a lot of debris that looks like desks and bits of aluminum from the building, and it can be hard to tell. And another thing that's wrong with the debris is that as we get further away from the building, we find there were eyewitness claims that there was shrapnel coming out towards the highway. And that's what we would expect from the Sugano experiment with the F-14, that the wings and tail should have been converted to shrapnel and sprayed at great distance with a lot of inertia. But if you look at the high-resolution photographs of the highway and of the grass on the Pentagon, you can't see any sign of that shrapnel.
Right. And we have to remember, this was 100 tons of airplane and cargo and so forth. And here's another thing that everyone should remember. Right around 9 o'clock, both of the World Trade Center towers had already been hit. People at the Pentagon knew this. The news media knew this. Policemen knew this. And this plane still went about 300 miles, Flight 77, supposedly, unmolested. And of all the places in the country that it could hit, what do the terrorists think of? They think of hitting the most guarded building in the entire country. How much sense does that make? It's ludicrous. And that the people in the Pentagon, the Pentagon wasn't evacuated. So you have potentially 20,000 people that were kept inside the Pentagon. And why is that? So they don't have witnesses outside, right?
Well, that makes sense to me. And it is important to point out that the Pentagon is equipped with anti-aircraft missiles and radar. And what kind of terrorist would think that they could get past that is amazing. And
Jerry.
One point is that if I were a terrorist, I would take a low-altitude approach if I had the flight skills in the hopes of evading that radar, but I don't think that you would count on being successful.
Which, of course, Hani Hanjour wasn't even hardly able to drive an automobile.
Right. Exactly.
Talk a little bit about the inconsistencies regarding the cell phone calls, particularly Ted Olson's.
Ted Olson is the one who had recently been testifying to the effect that the United States government would have many causes to give false evidence and false testimony if it met the national interest. And so his wife was on the flight and making a call to him about the terrorists. And Key Dudney has done some work indicating that it's very difficult to get a cell phone to even work at all from the air because the aircraft is moving through cells quickly that the switching equipment can't keep up.
They just developed that technology this year to be able to do that.
Well, yeah, and of course all this happened in 2001.
Right.
Now that story about which phone that she was using also morphed, because at first they were fairly clear that she was using a cell phone, and then it switched to, well, maybe she was using an airphone, one of the ones in the back of the seat, but did she have her credit card available? It went on and on.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, it's been fantastic having you on here. We can't wait to get Mr. Stanley on also in January.
Thank you so much, Jerry.
And everybody out there watching this show, listen to what Jerry had to say today. Go to his site, 911-strike.com.
And the article is Rebutting Pentagon 9/11, Getting the Facts Straight.
And plenty of other stuff out there also. And we could
talk. Our original article on the topic is Five-Sided Fantasy Island.
Right.
And that's got five web pages of information, a lot of pictures.
All right.
So that's what they also want to look at.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, keep up the good work there. We can't thank you enough for being on Wing TV. And as all of these guests come on TV, the preponderance of evidence just becomes overwhelming. Remember, folks, this didn't happen the way the government and the mainstream media says it did.
And the burden of proof isn't on us to prove that it did happen that way. It's already basically been proven that it did not happen the way they say it did.
Right. So everybody out there, have a good weekend. We're glad you're tuning in to Wing TV, and we'll be back again on Monday. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks so much, Jerry.
Thank you.